From KRCB in Santa Rosa, it's Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour with Michelle Anna Jordan.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Acura, featuring the 286-horsepower TL Type S with a solar sensing climate control system. Learn more at Acura.com.
You better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining out of.
Come over here, kid. Where's up? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste. You fry it. You make sure it doesn't stick. You got to do a boil. You shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, by country tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. It's Michelle Jordan. How are you doing this evening? Thanks for tuning in. Hope you enjoy this hour. There's a new book out. It's called, not exactly ironically, but it's called Eat This, 1001 Things to Eat Before You Diet, Culinary Adventures from Coast to Coast. And it had just come across my desk last week, and when I was getting ready for tonight's show, which celebrates Sonoma County's own Gravenstein apple, I thought, well, you know, he's got like 21 apples in this book. I better look up and see what the author has to say about the Gravenstein. My, oh my, he hasn't been to Sonoma County. Gravenstein, you see this only on farm stands because it doesn't work in the wholesale market. It has a complex flavor, but it is an unattractive fruit. And it was the word unattractive that really sort of astonished me. The Gravenstein is so beautiful. Sometimes I miss eating them because I buy a bunch and put them in a bowl and look at them. By the time I'm ready to eat them, it's too late. It's at least too late to enjoy them fresh. I think it's really an extraordinarily beautiful apple. It is also here in Northern California, one of the heralds of the summer harvest. I was driving from Sebastopol to Grayton just this last week, and there was a sign at Andy's Fruit Basket, fresh local Gravensteins, and it's like, okay, from here on out, we're not waiting for harvest. We're chasing after it. The Gravenstein, in many ways, I think, is the wisest apple because it ripens when we most need it. It's the first apple of the season to ripen, and right about the time you're thinking, gosh, I really want some apples, the last of, you know, the harvest last year, the storage apples that keep really well, those are just about gone, and along comes this beautiful, flavorful apple. I think it's, and I'm certainly not the first person to say this, I think it's the most flavorful, perhaps, of all the apples. Has a long reputation for being added to commercial applesauce, apple juice, because it boosts the flavor. It's wonderful in chutney, sautéed apples with pork, chicken, or foie gras. Nothing like a piece of seared foie gras on top of sautéed apples. It's wonderful. It has a short life. But I always think of the apple, I almost animate it in my mind, in that there it is holding our hands and escorting us towards the abundant variety of apples that will start coming in as we approach fall. So on that note, let me introduce my guests. We have John Kohling of Solana Gold. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Michelle.
And we have, Paula Shatkin. I knew I was going to mess up your last name, Paula. Shatkin, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you are working on an ARC project.
A Presidia project.
Presidia project, mm-hmm. Okay, with the Gravenstein for Slow Food. So we will be talking about what is going on with that. Mm-hmm. But first, let's just talk about the Gravenstein before we get into the business of protecting it and saving it. So what got you involved in working with Gravenstein apples?
Well, first of all, I'm not a farmer or a grower. I'm a social worker, but I joined Slow Food and started to learn about the goals of saving endangered foods, and I moved up here about 9 years ago, just about the time when there was a really fever pitch of vineyard conversions. And I would drive down roads and see murdered apple orchards right and left. And I went to a meeting, this was about 2003, and said, what are we doing about these apples? It looks like we're losing them, fast and furious. And that was when we got started thinking about whether this could be first an ARC product, and Slow Food has something called the Ark of Taste. Think of Noah's Ark. And foods are boarded into the ark, just like the animals were, that are endangered and good and have some cultural significance. So one day I drove around Sebastopol and took pictures of every single street, store, school, everything that had an apple, the name of the Gravenstein in it. I got this whole roll of film, and I sent it to Slow Food in New York, and that was the beginning.
Mm-hmm. And certainly we have Gravenstein Highway, we have Gravenstein School. I mean, Gravenstein is celebrated everywhere, particularly in Sebastopol.
Mm-hmm.
John, I want to bring you in. Solana Gold, apple juice.
Applesauce and vinegar, yeah.
And vinegar, okay. Where are you based?
Oh, we're based in Sonoma County, Sebastopol.
Uh-huh.
And I think the Gravenstein just it's a great apple and it becomes such a large tree that I think it when people see it and see such a large fruit tree it becomes bigger than life. I think that's one of the besides the fruit itself, and it's the tree itself also that impresses people on the size of a few fruit trees get that. I mean, walnuts get that big, but somehow walnuts, you know, you can't eat them right off the tree, you know.
Mm-hmm. What percentage of your business is devoted to the Gravenstein?
I would say 20-30%.
Mm-hmm. And is it like what I said, where it, you know, if the Gravenstein finds its way into products with a lot of other varieties of apples because it boosts flavor? I mean, that's sort of the way people talk about the Gravenstein.
Well, the Gravenstein, it's had a, especially in California, it's had a history of flavor and taste, and you know, people that live here know about it. And then there's, you know, when there's been consolidation in grocery stores, I mean, this, you know, Safeway's got customers in California know about Gravenstein's, but the Utah and Colorado and so forth, their other stores, they don't know much about Gravenstein. So
it's a really local thing.
It's really a California thing.
Regionally specific.
Regional, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't travel well. It doesn't travel that well.
It's a summer apple, and mm-hmm. summer apples have delicate skins,
mm-hmm.
so they don't they bruise easy, and when they're mishandled in a retail shelf with customers trying to look, because they're colored so differently,
mm-hmm.
That when the customers paw through them looking for the one that is the bigger or smaller or the perfect blush or something, that's when they get bruised, is when the customers are bouncing them around in a display case.
So maybe that accounts for this little passage in Eat This, calling it an unattractive apple, because not so much because it's unattractive, but it can become unattractive by handling?
By handling, yeah. By uneducated consumer handling damages it, and the grocers are... they're just not interested in. It's difficult for them to manage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't want to be the produce police and come over and tap you on the shoulder and say, "Hey, quit
right.
bouncing the apples around."
Yeah, yeah. It should be like the East Coast, where you never touch the produce. It's all wrapped up before you get to it.
And John, what John just said about uneducated consumers is really very much to the point of what Slow Food is doing, which is educating consumers. in all areas that we work in, but in here about the value of the apple, about the possibility of losing it, about the value of biodiversity in Sonoma County, and about the season and about the peak of the season and about where to get it, and the fact that if people learn about it and value it more, maybe they'll be willing to pay a little more for it, in which case the farmers may be able to make enough of a living so that they're not as tempted to sell their acreage.
Another, the economic realities of apple farming versus grape farming at this location, at this period in history, is pretty dismal. The last time I looked into the statistics, I think you got approximately $300 an acre if you grew apples, and you could get $3,000 to $10,000 an acre if you grew grapes. And just to give the long view so that we have some historical perspective on this, there was about 110 or so years ago in Sonoma County, grapes were being ripped out and apples were being put in. So, you know, there's a pendulum that swings, but it's a long pendulum. And I think we're more sophisticated in a lot of our farming techniques these days, and it's easier to do, like, wide-scale damage, I think. But there was this trend where apples were not, I mean, grapes were not economically viable, and we put in apples, and that carried us through most of the 20th century. Do you know how many acres we're down to now?
About 3,000.
3,000 acres of apples?
Yes.
I think it was
about 14 at its peak, and it's about 3 now.
Okay, that's actually better than I thought it was.
Actually went up a tiny bit last year.
Because I was told, and since the person who told me this is not here to fact-check for, you know, make sure that I'm quoting him correctly, he said he thought it was going to stabilize at 600 acres of apples in West County. He told me that 2 or 3 years ago. So if we're at 3,000, the plummet hasn't been quite as bad as he was predicting, although I have to say I know somebody right now who's taking out 30 acres of apple trees to put in vineyards.
Well, actually, there was an article in the Press Democrat last month saying that there had been a slight increase in apple acreage, and that had something to do with a decrease in the value of some of the grapes last year.
I believe. And I think we may see more of that, just because this year should be a bumper crop. I mean, if you look at what's going on with stone fruit, there's a huge crop of stone fruit this year. It's a good year for fruit. So if we have a bumper crop of grapes, we're going to see, we're going to see value dropping. And I think with all the planting that's been going on, a few years of bumper crops, and we're going to be in a different economic situation.
I think the small landowners in West County, not just Sebastopol, but Occidental, I mean, you can grow apples in Healdsburg. With Santa Rosa, there's lots of places. I think there's, in the past, the orchards were larger, and now they're becoming, people are subdividing, and there's a lot of parcels that are 2, 3, 4 acres, and they're not real viable for putting wine grapes in for 1 or 2 acres of grapes. So, and they might have some apple trees already on the property. And lately I have clients, people that want us to take care of the apple trees, and they're willing to, we're saying, hey, we can't really afford to take care of your 1 acre. And they say, oh, don't worry about it. We'll pay for the pruning. We'll help you. We'll subsidize you to take care of the trees.
Because
they want the trees
to stay
in. For decoration and just, for
and
heritage
they want them to
purposes.
Be used,
and
too.
And be used, yeah.
Now, what
and
a
so,
waste
And
of,
so they're actually, so there's going to be pockets of the Gravenstein's are going to, they're going to be there for a long time. There might not be 3,000 acres of them, but there's going to be scattered through Sonoma County, and it'd be great for people to plant more if just because they don't have to live in Sebastopol to grow them, they could they could be anywhere in Sonoma County and grow them.
Now, what about the possibility of what's it called, agricultural easements? Is I know some friends in Sebastopol who have a little 15-acre farm of old apple trees, and they got an agricultural easement, I think, which gave them tax benefits. I think it stays like it is for 20 years or something like that. And so they got a little economic value out of it. They have, I think the Duttons take care of their apples, and those trees will always be there. Now, is that something that agricultural historic easements, will that help at all with the Gravenstein, do we know?
I don't really know.
Are you talking about Williamson Act, or is this something different? Because there is a Williamson Act where you have you keep property in agriculture.
Actually, I think it is the Williamson Act.
And I think it is a 15-year phase out, something like that, and you can get property taxes reduced.
Right, yes, it is the Williamson Act.
Yeah. But that's available whether you put in wine grapes or
okay,
or,
so
or
you
can't. Scenes,
so you don't have to leave it in the agriculture that it's in when you form
no, you can,
the
any
easement.
Agriculture.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So.
Darn. Well, I think there should be a historical easement for things like Gravenstein trees and also for eucalyptus trees. That's something else I think is important.
Well, one of the things that you mentioned about value when you talk about how many dollars you get for an acre of grapes versus an acre of apples. That the slow food movement is involved in terms of educating the consumer is we need to think about value in more ways than just money. Of course, we can't blame the farmer who wants to make
more
money. Yeah,
but a farmer has to pay his mortgage.
So the goal of our project has been to raise the price of the Gravenstein so that the farmer can pay his or her mortgage. But the county, the community, the state needs to also realize that apples are mostly dry farmed. They don't require a lot of water. They require less pesticides. A lot of them are organic, not all, but a lot. There's some benefit to all of us by having not only the biodiversity, but to recognize that certain crops are better for our environment than others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so that's part of what we're trying to...
It's an interesting perspective. We're going to be right back with more talk about the Gravenstein apple here on Muffle. You're listening to Mouthful on KRCB. We're talking about the Gravenstein apple, and I think I might have seen some fresh Gravensteins here in the studio.
Oh, sure. Michelle, I brought some apples. The Gravensteins are just beginning to get ripe, and I brought some over just to show you the difference in colors.
Oh, okay, great.
And one of the reasons that grocers and consumers get confused and frustrated on the different colors of Gravenstein as they change through their five multiple color changes during the season.
Let's see them. Visuals work well on radio.
Okay, well, it takes six weeks to for all the color changes to happen on the tree. But I've got an example here of, this one is overripe. And that's what they tend to, that's just one that happens to be on the tree right now.
Yeah, this overripe one sort of has a yellowish gold background, and then uneven
red stripes
of red. And this is when, I know it's overripe at this point, but this is when the apple is so beautiful. I just love the apple when it looks like
and
this.
And smell.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And you can smell it. It's, you know, at least a foot away from me, and I can smell it. And at this point, the apple is really good for making applesauce.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's... Or baking, yeah.
Yeah, baking. Now, this one is mostly green, and then on one little section of it, you're just starting to see some red stripes develop. So what stage is this Gravenstein in?
These are in the early stages of ripening, and that's, you know, where the sun hits it and it gets extra ultraviolet radiation, then it tends to blush and variegate the skin.
Uh-huh.
For instance, this apple here, pass that over to her, that's a little lighter green. So...
Mm-hmm. You might not identify. This is very pale green. It's sort of the same color as my Volkswagen Beetle. You wouldn't immediately, if you didn't know apples, you wouldn't immediately identify this as a Gravenstein.
No, you might look at it and think it was a real light Granny Smith or maybe mm-hmm. a or a mutsu or a pippin or something that was out of that was a month or two early. And this apple is lighter green, so when the Gravenstein, when it first starts out, it starts dark green, and then as it starts becoming ripe, it gets a little lighter. And see, that apple's lighter now, so a grower could go up to an apple and pick that one and know that one would be ready to eat, whereas you might be standing right next to one and pull off a dark green one.
And the dark green is too tart at this point.
Like this one here. And that would be too tart in it, and it's like a week or 10 days different ripeness than that light green one.
Now, out of curiosity, are all these apples from the same tree?
Yes, they're all on the same branch.
So that it's is that indeterminate ripening, unlike determinate tomato plants, where they all ripen at one, within half an hour of each other?
Yeah, well, it is indeterminate, and depending on the crop load and how the apples are bunched and how
I would assume orientation to the sun
and microclimates. For instance, Paula was talking about Occidental. Occidental is basically a week or 10 days later ripening than Sebastopol. And then you would expect Healdsburg to be a little earlier than Sebastopol.
And do you pick them all at the same time and then sort them, or do you pick the ripe ones and then go back and pick again?
You generally size the first picking and you size pick for the larger size and pick maybe perhaps on the south and west side of the trees. And then if you were planning to go back to pick the second time, then a week or 10 days or 14 days, maybe even later, then you'd pick the other side of the tree. Medium and large sizes are really in demand in the marketplace, so you wouldn't really pick all the little apples. You just leave them on the tree.
And which ones do you use for juice and vinegar?
Well, the ones that don't make packing grade, and then also the, they've got bruises or blemishes or limb rubs. Perhaps they might have a little scab. It's a spore that grows in the springtime when there's too much rain and humidity. But the leftover apples, the extra ones, and then with the ones that get overripe, the ones that fall off the tree and hit the ground, those all go for processing.
And how many acres of apples do you take care of?
I take care of about 350 right now.
And those you manage? You have your own orchards?
I have my own home orchard that I own, and then all the rest of the orchards I lease.
Right. Okay. And then do you also take care of small orchards that people have at their homes?
Yes. I have some orchards that are might have a 1 or 2, 3 acre orchards up and down the road next to maybe a 5 or 10 acre orchard. So I'll take care of some of those little ones if they're convenient. It's cost prohibitive to really go out of my way too much to get the small ones, but it's out of a habit too. Sometimes you just you see that the people don't want to waste the fruit, so you know you're not going to make any money, but you do it anyway.
Sure. And so is your year just getting ready to start as far as production and that sort of thing goes?
We just started picking up the first apples that fall off the tree. They're we didn't thin them. We didn't thin the apples much, so they're growing in bunches of 4 or 5. So
And when you say thin,
Gravenstein's have real short stems, so they're self-thinning. So an apple that has a short stem will be self-thinning, which tend to be a longer-lived tree. For instance, a golden delicious or a Rome beauty, which has a long stem, they don't tend to push the other apples off, so they overcrop.
So that means you have to go, there's 4 or 5 flowers, and you have to pull some off?
4 or 5 flowers, and they all grow. But if all those, the tree actually, it actually takes more energy to grow the seed inside the apple than it does the apple. So if you have an abundance of small apples with a lot of seeds, that's taking minerals and vitamins out of the tree, and so the more seeds they produce, they tend to expire earlier.
Huh, interesting.
So the short stem apples, like a Greening or a Gravenstein, when they grow in bunches, they'll push each other off sooner. So the sooner they get off the tree, then the less the tree has to develop the seed.
I did not know that.
Me neither.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
So those ones, I had a question. Those ones that fall, the self-thinning early, those are a little sour, aren't they?
Yeah, they're sour. They're very high acid. But we can make vinegar out of them. And then right now we're just making vinegar out of the apples that fall, the Gravenstein's.
How do you make your vinegar?
Have a contract packager, Manzana Products, on Manzana, Green Valley Road in Sebastopol, the last cannery left in Sonoma County. and they process. To be quick, the apple's crushed, and then the juice is fermented into alcohol, and then the vinegar bacteria feeds on the alcohol as a food source, mm-hmm. and then when you're tasting the vinegar, you're actually tasting the byproducts of the vinegar bacteria.
Yeah, the acetobacters, they're called.
Yeah.
So you are doing it from pure apple juice.
From pure apple juice, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's sold under the Solana brand. And what sort of distribution do you have with that?
We wholesale to health food distributors, uh-huh. and then they bring to the retail stores. And it's, you know, in California, there's Fiesta Market and Oliver's and, Petaluma Market. You know, there's a lot of independents carry health food stores.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few products in Raley's. You know, we have a few applesauces in mm-hmm. The natural section of Raley's.
Mm-hmm. Now, if I remember things correctly, the first farmers to produce apple cider vinegar in the United States were really smart, and they, in I don't know if it was at that point the FDA or what, whoever controlled labeling at that point, they were able to apply and own the right to label their vinegar without any adjective in front of that. Hmm. And so just vinegar legally in the United States is by definition apple cider vinegar. And usually these days in markets you always see it labeled as apple cider vinegar because it's a plus to identify it.
Well, actually, distilled vinegar can be made out of, I don't think there's any legal, distilled vinegar can be made out of grains, which typically is made out of grains.
Right, all kinds of things.
But you actually can make it out of wood wastes,
mm-hmm.
cellulose wood wastes.
Yeah. But you have to call it distilled vinegar. You can't just call it vinegar. You have to identify it by some other adjective.
Well, when we need some FDA regulation interpretation, I'm going to come talk to you.
I found that little obscure thing when I was writing a book about vinegar, and I just thought that was so interesting that in the United States, the apple cider vinegar producers, you know, had a leg up and got that regulation. And to my knowledge, it hasn't been changed yet.
It's probably been added to, but the original regulations are probably still there. Yeah.
Yeah. So you produce apple cider vinegar, apple juice, applesauce.
Yeah.
Any other products?
Well, we have organic canned pears, made by a company up Independent Foods in Sunnyside, Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're co-packing. They call it co-packing in mm-hmm. the industry. So I've teamed up with those people,
mm-hmm.
and then we're going to come up with cups this year. We're going to put the applesauce in cups. Originally, we just packed in glass because of the purity and
the
longevity
glass is nice.
and so forth. And we had a kind of a psychological resistance against plastic, but I guess it's the convenient.
Is the market demanding
it? The market's demanding it. It's convenient, and people like the portion control. So we're going to go to plastic cups. In addition to the glass.
In addition. How long have you been doing Solana Gold?
For 25, 30 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you always been based where you're based?
Yes. Yeah, I originally started out in the early 80s going to San Francisco Farmers Market with frozen apple juice. Put up by Ken Ratzlaff in Occidental.
Ratzlaff, yes.
Yeah. And it was a great product. And, of course, in those days, we didn't have to pasteurize because, you know, we would pick them off the trees and keep them clean. And, mm-hmm. you know, for centuries, people have been taking apple juice,
sure.
Making fresh-pressed apple juice without pasteurization, and nobody got E. coli.
Absolutely.
So it's just, you know, one person got there was an unfortunate circumstance with Odwalla, and then it really took a really great product off the market that, you know, everybody has to pasteurize.
So everyone has to pasteurize.
Yeah, I don't think it's legally allowed to sell unpasteurized apple juice.
And, you know, there's a real difference. I think there's a real difference in taste.
Oh, yeah. Well, the pasteurization takes away some of that freshness and the enzymes.
I think, does the process reduce the acid, or does it reduce our perception of the acid? I'm just curious, because to me, this pasteurized seems a little sweeter and doesn't have, like you say, that freshness, but it doesn't seem to have those high acid notes.
I don't know. I never took any juice before and then after and tested the acid. I don't think it would change the acid.
It just changes your perception of it.
I think it just changes the freshness, the enzymes, to end your perception.
Yeah. So I guess these days the only way to get absolutely fresh, you know, a la minute apple juice is to make it yourself.
Well, or you don't have to make juice, just use, eat fresh apples. You're making it in your mouth.
Sure, sure. But if you want some of that
with the
really
fiber, the fibers, that's what, you know,
fresh
that's,
juice.
As a during apple season, I can eat typically during the Gravenstein season where I'm trucking apples back and forth to cannery and so forth, I might eat 5 or 10 apples a day.
Wow.
And
do you ever get sick?
And I never get a stomach I never get a stomach ache from that. But if I drank 2 or 3 glasses of apple juice, I'd have a stomach ache.
Oh, and yes, of course. So you probably
because
the
sugar
really
is in a liquid form and it's so
easy
quickly
to,
absorbed that that's what gives you a stomach ache. Whereas when you eat the apple, you have all that fiber, so it digests a little more slowly.
Hey, you're listening to Mouthful.
Grapes are covering the grassland. They're buying up old family farms. They're selling out. Who can blame them? Wine's a cash crop growing strong. And in the fields of Pendle Valley, buildings sprout up like new sown seeds. Now they call it Telecom Central. This is what consumers need. I am the hand that rocks the cradle. I am the voice that sings this song. I am the one called local color, salt of the earth, but not for long. Take a look, 'cause I'm gone.
You're listening to Mouthful on KRCB. Thanks for sticking with us. Just to catch you up, we are talking about the Gravenstein apple. The apple of Sebastopol's eye, you could say, just now coming into season and enjoying really great attention from the Russian River Convivium of Slow Food. And it's going to be celebrated twice in August, on August 5th at the Sebastopol Farmers Market and then at the Gravenstein Apple Fair. What day is that? Is that the following weekend?
Gravenstein Apple Fair is August 11th and 12th. Okay. And there's another celebration as well. The Sebastopol Chamber of Commerce has declared August 5th through 12th to be Gravenstein Week. And during that week, almost every restaurant in Sebastopol is going to feature a recipe with Gravenstein apples. The Slow Food has developed a brochure talking about the history of the apple, and all the restaurants will have them, and our logo in the window, and many of the restaurants are giving us their recipe, and we're printing up a recipe book with current recipes from the restaurants, plus a bunch of the prize-winning pie recipes from the fair.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be selling those at our booth at the fair, as well as, I think, Save the Gravenstein bumper stickers and tote bags. And at the farmer's market on August 5th, that'll be the real kickoff to Gravenstein Week.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have fresh juice presser there.
Oh,
you can
great.
Have your fresh juice and activities for the kids and information and apple juice products and apples and lots of ways for people to learn the importance mm-hmm. of supporting our local farmers.
Now, do you know any of the dishes that restaurants are going to be serving? Do you know yet what they are?
I know that Zazu Dusky is mm-hmm. going to do fritter. I think she does it anyway every
mm-hmm.
year. And I think Screaming Mimi's is going to do baked apples with ice cream at the
mm-hmm.
at the farmer's market. And somebody else is coordinating the recipe book. So
mm-hmm.
I don't
who's
know
doing that?
Sue Campbell.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay, sounds great. I'll have to do a column on it to coincide with Gravenstein Week. Right up my alley. I love cooking with Gravensteins. Now, we didn't quite finish on the topic of the color of the apples, John.
Oh, yes, about the colors. Well, as the Gravenstein ripens on the tree, it starts out dark green. And so if a grower starts picking them dark green, you go to the store, they're going to be dark green. And as they get riper a week later, they pick the apples off the tree and they're light green. And then a week or 10 days after that, they'll start turning light yellow, and a lot of times, sometimes the apple will look light yellow with just a few little red marks on it, And so it's not going to. So you've got three different color changes right there that might not look like the same apple to a person. So if somebody goes in and they buy a really dark Gravenstein and they eat it and they go, oh my God, it's really sour. And then they don't buy them the rest of the season. And then they walk by the booth and the display, and there might be a Gravenstein that's only picked 2 weeks later and it looks completely different.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got a lot of. It's hard to get for people to understand it when they really don't know the story behind it.
Mm-hmm. Now, so, what's the process that it goes through? Say you pick a dark green one, like this one that I'm holding.
Apples don't ripen off the tree. Like okay. Stone fruit will ripen and sweeten off the tree. Apple, when you pick it, then it's that's the highest sugar content it's going to have.
Okay, so what's going to happen if I set this on my counter or in my refrigerator?
It's
for
going to
3 weeks.
It's going to dehydrate.
So it's going to shrivel up.
It's going to dehydrate.
Uh-huh.
And then eventually the skin will be compromised, and then you'll have, between the water and the air, it'll have, it'll break, the bacteria will start breaking it down.
Okay. So it won't, a dark green Gravenstein will not turn into a red striped Gravenstein.
And they'll only change color when they're on the tree. So, and also a lot of times they can, in refrigeration situations, they can... change color. They really won't change sugar, but they can change color a little bit. They can get a little dark, you know, more yellowish and a little more red stripes. But generally speaking, so anyway, we went to the third color. So we went dark green first, then light green, then light yellow, and then they're light yellow for a few days, week or 5 days, and then they start getting red stripes on them, and then another half a week or a week later, they'll get darker yellow with dark, more red stripes.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about the standard Gravenstein, which there's also a different sport. There's a Rosebrook Gravenstein, and there's also a red Gravenstein.
Yeah, well, would you talk about those?
Okay, Rosebrook is a certain sport. I think it's only known around in Sonoma County. I don't know if Rosebrook is worldwide or just here, but... That develops color earlier and faster than the standard Gravenstein, and most of the Gravensteins in Sebastopol are standard Gravenstein. There's not that many Rosebrooks left. And in fact, they're the heritage of the heritage. Those should be protected.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the red Gravenstein, which just develops. It doesn't go through those five color changes like the standard Gravenstein. It pretty much goes from dark green to light. It pretty much goes from dark green to light red, and then really red pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically, and it's got, the flesh is a little whiter. The regular Gravenstein is a little yellowish, light yellowish flesh, and the red Gravenstein's got a white flesh.
And how does the flavor compare between varieties?
The red Gravenstein is a little sweeter early in the season, but it doesn't have the fully developed flavors and aromas of the standard Gravenstein.
So do you think the standard Gravenstein is...
Yeah, I'd say the standard Gravenstein and the Rosebrook Gravenstein are the premier. The red ones are, they're colorful and they're fun. If you make sauce with them, they kind of make a pink, make a kind of a pink sauce, so they're fun to mix with when you're making applesauce.
Mm-hmm.
It's a risk to the marketing when Slow Food is talking about trying to help get the word out about how wonderful the apple is, and there's a risk if farmers jump the gun a little and start putting out apples in the stores that aren't quite as wonderful as they should be, and just as you said, a person will pick up an apple, it might be a little sour, it might be a little unready, and that may sour them on buying more. So we really have to...
And I think that when there was 5 or 10,000 acres of Gravensteins, that tended to be a problem where because the market was limited and the grocers really weren't anxious to handle local fruit. They wanted those 1-year-old Washington apples.
Right.
And so now that there's less apples and there's less packers, there's less need for the growers to jump the gun and beat the guy across town and buy 1 week earlier in market with some green fruit that's not really going to get any repeat sales.
Mm-hmm. What do we know? excuse me. What do we know about the roots of the Gravenstein? Where they originally are from?
Well,
I have that, actually. Jutland, someplace in Denmark, they started. And then they were brought to Fort Ross. You have the rest.
1811,
okay.
No, go ahead. You're
no,
doing
no, that's
good.
It. No, I have... They
By the Russians, of course.
It's a variety originated in Italy in the early 17th century. In 1669, seedlings were given as a gift to Duke Augustenberg of Castle Grafenstein in the Schleswig-Holstein part of southern Denmark. That's what I got.
Well, there we go. It's a Dutch apple.
Well, German migrants brought it to North America in 1790, and Russian fur traders planted it.
A Danish apple.
Well, that's when it became... Danish or the Duke of Grafenstein, that's when it became in Western history. But do we know that some caravan went to China and brought it back from China or Persia? We don't know that.
No.
I don't think we do.
So that's as far back as we go
with
the Grafenstein. Interesting. Really interesting. And so the Russian fur traders established it at Fort Ross,
1811. And then
that's before they established the first vineyards.
Oh, yeah.
Because first vineyards were not too long after that on Green Hill, the intersection of Green Hill. I forget the other road. But they beat the monks in...
The Franciscan monks.
Yeah.
They noticed the Grafenstein growing out at Fort Ross, and then they decided that, you know, all that windy, salty air was not really a place for growing fruit, so they moved it inland and... And then I'm not sure exactly where they made the first plantation, but they did move it inland away from the coastline.
Mm-hmm. Now, I hear Malcolm Clark of Gourmet Mushrooms. He talks about the shiitake mushroom and the Grafenstein apple are both suited to the same location, and that was why he established Gourmet Mushrooms in Sebastopol. I always thought that was an interesting connection.
A little bit of that coastal air,
but not so much, not so briny as being all the way out towards the coast, I guess is part of what we're saying here. Because it seems to do better in Sebastopol, say, than the town of Sonoma. Is that, you know, or is that just mythology?
Well, one of the reasons they do so well in Sebastopol is because the high humidity in the air at night. And mm-hmm. it's cool and a lot of moisture from the ocean,
mm-hmm.
whereas Sonoma is probably got a lot less humidity.
Hotter and drier.
Mm-hmm. Hotter and drier. And so, you know, if we're talking about apples that were established 150 years ago, there was not very much irrigation, mostly dry farming, so they had to go where they could dry farm.
Mm-hmm.
And Sonoma was not the place that could dry farm apples.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it doesn't mean with irrigation, I'm sure you could grow, you know, they grow apples down in the Central Valley with irrigation and in the eastern Washington mm-hmm. In the desert.
But I think when you irrigate them, do they get a little watery in their taste in the end?
If you overwater them, you mm-hmm. can. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you water them just the right amount.
Mm-hmm.
And a grower's going to water them to... one grower might water more than another. So if you water too much, then you have certain diseases that can develop. So the grower just can't go wide... overwater him and thinking that he's going to get a big crop because it can backfire on you.
Yeah, you damage the root system and...
Damage the root system, uh-huh. got phytophthora in the root system, or you mm-hmm. can get what they call water core, bitter pit. You can get calcium deficiencies in the skin. It makes mm-hmm. The apple unattractive for market.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So what's happening next with Slow Food's efforts? You've got this week-long celebration.
Well, and Slow Food internationally has adopted the Grafenstein apple as in a project called the Presidium, which is the highest level of support that the organization gives to a product. And it might be interesting to know that there are 290 Presidia projects in 30 countries in the world. There are only 5 in the United States, and this is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So the other 4 are wild rice, manumen, Cape May oysters, Navajo sheep, raw milk cheese, and then the Sebastopol Grafenstein apple. So it's a project that we'll be involved in for a long time. This is only the first year that you can actually see it, but we've been working, meeting with growers and developing protocols for the growing and how to treat the apples for several years now, and working on some marketing, developing some new marketing channels, And we'll be doing it next year and the year after too.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you say one of the things is to increase, or one of the efforts is to increase the cost of the apple. Mm-hmm. Can we talk a little bit about that? What that means at the consumer end of things?
Well, what I've learned from a lot of the growers in my talks in the last couple of years is that they make the most profit on the fresh apple. Do you agree with that?
Yes.
So they don't get a very high profit margin on the juice and the mm-hmm. and the processed parts. Well, obviously, the processor has to make some money on that too. So some of the growers have said that it's really not a big increase in the price if they had 20 cents a pound more. I mean, something small. I don't remember exactly what. Do you remember what it was?
Well, if we're talking about commercial Gravenstein, you know, mm-hmm. apples versus organic, last year, for a number of years, the organic ones, for I know more about the organic ones than the conventional, but I do know the conventional prices. For years, the organic prices were basically about, the grower would get about 60 cents a pound for the organic apples, mm-hmm. and the conventional guys would get about... they get about $15 a box, which is a 40-pound box. So what's mm-hmm. that? That's about 30 cents a pound. So they'd get, like, the conventional growers would get about 30 cents a pound, and organic would get 60. And in the last few years, it's kind of gone up because there's less Gravenstein growers, and the growers that are left have decided, hey, let's just raise our prices, and if it's economically unfeasible, then we'll just close up and, mm-hmm. and lease it out to a vineyard operator. And... So last year we were surprised. We raised the price of organic apples to $40 and to $1 a pound from 60 mm-hmm. in 1 year, and it didn't seem to. We seemed to sell more.
Good.
And I'd have to say it was all due to slow food.
Would you have to say that?
And what about conventional apples?
Conventional also. The conventional raised their price. I don't know if they raised it that much, but their mm-hmm. conventional raised their price, and I think this year they're going to. They're going to probably bump it up a few more dollars a case. There, I think the conventional guys are getting $20, or I think they're getting 50 cents or 60 cents a pound.
I think the important part is that they didn't need a lot more per pound mm-hmm. to make a big difference.
And this is the wholesale price.
Yes, wholesale.
Yeah, wholesale price. Mm-hmm. So what's the price if you're selling direct to consumer? What sort of pricing do we have?
Farmers markets, I think, are about $2 a pound.
Yeah, I saw them at Andy's for $1.99, and mm-hmm. I think those were Kozlowski's apples.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, in the farmers markets, it's $2 a pound seems to be the farmers market price for a lot of things, vegetables, mm-hmm. Different soft fruit, you know, some of the soft fruits are a little
higher. $3.50 for heirloom tomatoes, $3 to $3.50.
Grow them yourself.
Yeah, not where I live. I have a black, I have wonderful cold nights where I live in Sebastopol, but that means I get mushy tomatoes. So I give my tomato money to the farmers at the farmers market.
You water them too much, Michelle.
No, it gets really cold at my house. I actually don't water them much. I'm really bad at that. But I'm in a little microclimate, and I think that's what it is. I tried for several years, and I just don't get good tomatoes.
You need a roommate with a green thumb.
Yeah, certainly. I do really good with herbs. I grow fabulous quince. The quince just do really well, and I never water the quince. But tomatoes just doesn't work. Anyway, you don't need to hear my gardening problems.
That's a different show.
I have choppy sunshine. I have a lot of things that block the sun, so there's only certain periods during the day where they're getting as warm as tomatoes want to be, and then they're cold many, many nights during the summer.
So you're one of the few PBS radio hosts that want a logger to move in next door.
Actually, maybe somebody with a lot of bulldozers. It's buildings and a hill that I need somebody to pick up my house and shift its footprint. That would work. Anyway, we're not talking about my garden. We're talking about the Gravenstein apple. I want to review the events that are coming up. We have August 5th at the Sebastopol Farmers Market taking place in the town square across from Whole Foods Market. Market officially opens at 10, but if you get there at 9, you get a parking place, and there's a lot already going on. Continues until 1 o'clock.
I think it's 2.
Two?
It
spills over on either side. But I know they start wrapping up around 1. children's activities.
Yes.
What do you know?
Oh, balloons and, you know.
Okay, face painters.
Yes,
so
yes.
Not necessarily related to apples, just children activities.
Children's activities. And pies will be sold. I think Evelyn Cheatham's group is going to sell pies.
Mm-hmm.
And special dishes, like I said, Screaming Mimi's going to do some work. And I believe that other bakery that has beautiful things.
Patisserie Angelica. Fabulous apple tarts from them. Hopefully somebody will make apple galettes. Apple galettes are really, really delicious. It's one of my favorite things in the world is a good apple galette or a thin crusted apple tart.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very, it's like, gosh, the dough you roll out to about an eighth of an inch.
I have a recipe that you put in the PD for that once.
It's one of my favorite recipes. So that's happening on
August 5th,
and then the 5th through the 12th, you can go to local restaurants and find apple dishes on the menu.
Right. And there'll be actually little table tents on each table in those restaurants explaining the project and the importance of supporting the local growers.
Mm-hmm. And then you're going to have a table at the Gravenstein Apple Fair taking place August 11th and 12th.
Right.
At the sweetest little fair in California.
Yeah.
And just, you know, about a mile from my house. So I can walk there if it's not.
Regal Road.
Regal Ranch Park.
Right.
And there'll be tons of, there's always a lot of publicity about the Gravenstein Apple Fair. It's sort of impossible not to get information about it. Low admission and really very much a country fair. Lots of food. You can sit on a hay bale and listen to music. Yeah, really good music.
A lot of people come to that fair from all over Northern California, and a lot of them come to buy their apples.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll have your apple growers there selling apples.
So don't miss it. It's our own little apple fair. And you can find out lots of information about the Gravenstein, of course, if you're listening outside the area. Is there information on the Slow Food website?
Yes. Our local group has a website as well, and the address is Slow Food RR. That stands for Russian River. That's our local group.
.org.
And then there's slowfoodusa.org has the information about the whole organization.
Okay. Well, thanks so much to both of you for taking the time on a Sunday to come talk about Sebastopol's beloved apple, Paula Shatkin, working for Slow Food, the Russian River Convivium, and John Coding of Solano Gold. And I wish you both a really great, successful season.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Meet me back here next week for another tasty episode of A Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour, here on KRCB, Yummy Public Radio for Sonoma County and beyond.
I'll be with you in apple blossom time. I'll be with you to change your name to mine.
Support for Mouthful comes from KRCB Radio members and from Mangiamo. Located on the Windsor Town Green, Mangiamo offers house-made pizza, pasta, and gourmet takeout for lunch and dinner. Reservations and information at 707-838-1616 or mangiamofood.com.
The bride, the sun shines on today. What a wonderful wedding there's gonna be. What a wonderful day for you and me.
Mouthful is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to mouthful@michelleannajordan.com. That's Michelle with one L. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast from krcb.org or from iTunes.